flurry of Stone Temple Pilots and more music than we might normally play, which can only mean one thing. It's time for a sense of place. And that place, I think I'll let my guest explain. Jock Sarong, it's his idea. It's the place where he came up with the thoughts behind his latest novel, which is called Preservation. He's a former lawyer. He's joining me now. Jock, welcome.
Thanks. Yeah.
Jock, tell us about the song. Is it sort of time and place?
Yeah, it is. It's very much a product of its context for me. That song was around, in the mid-90s when I was in my mid-20s. And for me, that's a time when you're most selfish and you're least accountable. And I remember it being part of a mixtape that I think we had taken down to the island, and it got played a lot.
Okay.
There were mates down there who had guitars who played good guitar, and I sort of have these memories of hollering it into the night on hot summer nights. And
so there you were in glorious wilderness.
Making this horrible
with your
racket.
Mixtape.
The guitar was good. The voices were horrible.
So Flinders Island, you better locate that for us, because it is a remote place.
There's a neat way of thinking about this, which is if you imagine Tasmania being in inverted commas, the one on the left is King Island and the one on the right is Flinders, and indeed a group called the Furneaux Group, which is a whole lot of tiny little islands, and then Flinders is the big one among them.
Is it a beautiful place, a windswept place, a wild place?
It's a really interesting place geographically because one side of it is Bass Strait, with all that goes with that, and the other side of it is the Tasman Sea, and it's really quite a different environment.
This visit with your loud friends, and is that your first time there?
All up, I've been going there for 26 or 27 years, I think.
How did that start?
Started with a close mate whose family had a place there, still do in fact. And I had gone down on a few trips with him during our uni years. And then more and more mates got involved in that. My then girlfriend, now wife, came down there. And we used to get around in... Damien, my mate, had this Meyer delivery van that I think must have been built in the 1600s. And it was just a big fiberglass box. And we'd cram as many mates and boxes of beer into this thing as we could. And so he'd drive us around. It had a top speed of, God knows, 30 kilometres an hour. So yeah. I thought the island was gigantic and that everything was an enormous distance apart.
It's not so much big as you were slow.
Yeah. If you get in a modern car, all these things are right next to each other.
How do you actually get there? I mean, one thing to get a Meyer delivery van there, but getting people onto the island, what's the...
There are scheduled routes from Launceston and from Essendon Airport.
Okay, all right.
And a lot of chartering, I guess.
Which takes us to the story that informs your book, and this is an amazing tale, because you mentioned those inverted commas and Bass Strait, and... Back in the day, those inverted commas would have been fairly hazardous for shipping. Which is...
Very much so. So Bass Strait, at the time that this wreck happened, hadn't been charted. And indeed, you know, in its indigenous history, it appeared and disappeared all the time with the coming and going of ice ages. So it's a really ephemeral body of water. And any shipping that came to Sydney in the early days would go south of Tasmania and then loop up to the north and follow the coast. And so an Englishman called Furneaux had done a chart that just had this gap. He wasn't sure what happened over that stretch of water. And James Cook had done a similar chart from the north, which showed a gap. So no one knew what happened in there. And the Sydney Cove, as it came along that stretch of eastern Tasmania, was rapidly sinking. And it was a merchant voyage. It was carrying an enormous amount of rum. And like 31,000 litres of rum.
Or as they called it in Sydney in those days, all the major food groups.
Yes. And the other thing they called it was money. You could buy and sell a human life with the stuff. And so the captain makes this desperate decision to turn to the west in the hope that into the gap in the chart, in the hope that he could beach the ship and save everyone, and accidentally sailed himself into Bass Strait.
And the wrecked... Then on Flinders Island or the islands around, the little islands around that.
Yeah. So to torture my metaphor further, Flinders has roughly circular island below it called Cape Barron Island. And the two of them together look like an exclamation mark. And just under Cape Barron is this tiny little island called, which was then named Preservation after the wreck. And that's where he beached it.
But the story is extraordinary because they're wrecked there. They have, well... rum, perhaps bobbing about them in the sea. But eventually they make it on foot to Sydney.
The reasons for doing that are really interesting. This was a speculative voyage, which means that no one in Sydney ordered the 31,000 litres of rum. Yep. So Sydney didn't know they were coming. Calcutta didn't know they hadn't got there, and they've sailed off the chart. So when you put those things together, they've completely vanished themselves. And once they kind of came to that realisation, the only real solution to the problem is to launch the longboat of the Sydney Cove, which is, I guess, a small yacht, put some men on that and try and sail to Sydney to raise the alarm.
So the sailors are Bengalis, but there's a few English and Scots.
It's the
usual combination of the...
Yeah, so 17 men, of whom 13 are Bengalis and the remainder are Scotsmen.
Not all of them get to Sydney, of course. They so eventually fetch up on the 90 Mile Beach. There's a sort of a parting of the ways, or some stay on the island.
So the
my recall is unclear.
The numbers are 55 men on the ship, all men, in fact. And of them, five died of exhaustion on the pumps. A sixth fell out of the rigging. So they're down to 49 when they beach the ship.
Five died of exhaustion on the pumps.
It's a horrible thought, isn't it?
Extraordinary.
Yeah. And so they're down to 49. They put 17 on the longboat. And after 2 days, they've wrecked the longboat on 90 Mile Beach. So the 17 survive the wreck and they start walking. And as you said, three of them got to Sydney.
And one of them kept a record of this.
Yeah, a guy called William Clark, and he is a bit of a compromised witness because he's the nephew of the founders of this trading company. So he's in charge of the cargo. So to a very great extent, this calamity is his doing. And he writes a diary. Towards the end, the diary drops off a bit because he's been speared through both hands. So it winds up a bit of a scribble towards the end. But it's the only real record we have of what happened on the walk.
You have turned these events to fiction, which is, I mean, they are so rich and obviously there's great potential there.
Well, there is, because at a superficial level, it is a shipwreck and survival story.
Yes.
But there are all these deeper layers to it. And the really important...
That we can only guess to.
Exactly, yeah. And the important one, which again is guesswork in terms of the documentary record, is that these walkers made first contact with probably six or eight Aboriginal tribes across two nations. It's such a different first contact story from the usual idea of British soldiers. This is Bengalis meeting Aboriginal people in the bush.
That's quite a remarkable thing. And there we are, Flinders Island is the sort of spur for this. And you keep going back. It's sort of a pretty special place in your world and life.
Yeah, it is. And I keep trying to work out how to explain that. But I think as a writer, I, like all writers, you know, I'm really fascinated by people.
Did you write much of the book there?
Yeah, or I researched a lot of the book there. Yeah. Sometimes I'd write, and it's a good place for that because it's very lonely in a lot of respects.
Apart from the usual occasional gangs of youths who turn up.
Those days are long gone.
And loud music system.
It's much more sedate these days. So I do a lot of thinking down there and researching. There's a very good museum on the island. And because shipping and shipwrecks are such a big part of the history of the place, the museum is really well catered to that.
And back in the day, I mean, there were people bobbing about, even in that sort of early or late 18th century.
Yeah, and one of the interesting ways to think about the Sydney Cove and what it represents is that all of these other human activities came about as a result of that wreck, and the big one is sealing. These people, as they tried to make Sydney, they noticed that there were an enormous number of seals in that eastern side of Bass Strait. That was reported to Sydney. People got wind of it and realised there was a fortune to be made. And within 20 years, there's an enormous sort of anarchic society down there of escaped convicts, pardoned convicts, just really speculators killing seals.
Well, there's another story, perhaps. if this sort of stuff whets your appetite, then there is so much there. I'm sure it must. Jock Sarong is the author that brings this to life, and his book is Preservation. A retelling of those extraordinary events, and Flinders Island is his sense of place. Now, Jock's actually been doing a book event on Flinders Island in a local cafe. That's coming up 1st of December.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So if you happen to be passing...
or if your ship's in trouble.
Otherwise, I'm sure you can find the book in shops. Jock, thank you so much.
Pleasure, Jonathan. Thanks.
Blueprint, you're on RN.